Thanks. And thank you for getting up early in the morning on the last day of the conference and coming to our presentation. Let me apologize. I neglected to put in the usual disclaimer slide at the beginning of my slideshow, but I don't have any conflicts. This research was funded by the Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery of the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services. So a little background. Probably as many of you know in the audience here, the links between substance abuse and crime and employment are really pretty well established. Substance abuse increases criminal activity and imposes substantial costs on society. It also adversely affects employment and reduces productivity through increased morbidity. Reducing criminal activity and increasing employment are really recognized as important outcomes of substance abuse treatment. So a little further background. Washington State actually was a very interesting place for someone like myself because it really provided really a rich natural laboratory, both in the field of substance abuse and in the field of occupational health, which I've also done quite a bit of work in. But in 2005, the legislature passed Senate Bill 5763 that established what was called the Treatment Expansion Program. And the idea was really simple. It was to expand treatment this part of it wasn't so simple. Everybody sort of agreed that expanding treatment would be a good idea. But in order to do that, that law took about $35 million or so from the Medicaid budget and gave it to drugs and alcohol to expand treatment, principally for adults on Medicaid and also adults on general assistance. There were other provisions for expanding treatment to youth. That's not part of this study. In Washington, public clients must show evidence of chemical dependency. So when I talk about treatment here, I'm really talking about chemical dependency treatment. So from 2005 to 2009, funding was increased, as I've just said, to expand access to chemical dependency treatment. And admissions increased by about a third for Medicaid disabled clients and by almost 80% for GAU clients. Again, GAU is just the Washington State General Assistance Program. Senate Bill 5763 really assumed that chemical dependency treatment would have a significant cost offset and thereby, sort of quotation marks, pay for itself. As part of a larger study, we studied that and published the results last year and did document substantial cost offset in the sense of people who went through treatment had subsequently decreased healthcare expenditures, and that difference really made up for the increase in the funding that the program awarded. So study aims, this is really part of a larger study, as I said, funded by the Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery, and I examined for this particular study crime and employment outcomes of chemical dependency treatment. There are two principal aims there. One is to report descriptive information on crime and employment outcomes for the program, and then second, to analyze the relationship of treatment to crime outcomes and employment outcomes. So the study design was a pretty standard retrospective cohort study. People were enrolled over this 7-year period. We had a 2-year baseline and a 2-year follow-up period for all clients. The study population consisted, as I said before, of Medicaid disabled clients and general assistant clients. And the intervention cohort was approximately 26,000 clients, with the majority of them being Medicaid. The comparison cohort was slightly larger, almost 30,000, again with a disproportionate share of that cohort being Medicaid clients. So as many of you probably know, in evaluation work of this type, it's always a challenge to get an adequate comparison group, and our study was no different. But what Washington did that a number of people have taken advantage of is they developed a method for specifying what we came to call a need indicator. And that need indicator was based on administrative data that included treatment records, pharmacy claims, and arrest records. That need indicator was validated in a study by Sears back in 2010. So these are crime and outcome employment measures. They're shown on the screen. Number of arrests, number of felony charges, number of gross misdemeanor charges. We did not have data on convictions. The employment measures included any employment during the follow-up period, number of quarters with positive earnings during the follow-up period, and cumulative earnings. Okay, so three measures each, three for crime and three for employment. The statistical techniques I'm not going to talk too much about. We estimated a series of statistical models that included negative binomial models, logistic regression models, and linear regression models. And the study was able to control for a limited set of factors. They included, most importantly really, pretreatment earnings and pretreatment criminal activity. Demographic factors included age, gender, race and ethnicity, health risk score, and then the number, if it's not shown on here, the number of months of eligibility. We estimated a number of models. I'm not going to go into the detail. If anybody has questions, you can come up to me after the presentation or email me. Number of difference in difference models, but those models, for reasons that I don't fully understand, produce larger effect sizes, larger results, and so we took the more conservative approach of controlling for differences in baseline in these factors and then estimating the differences in outcomes. So this is some data on characteristics of the study population. About 60% were male, roughly three-quarters were white. The average age was ranged from about 40 to 45. The health risk scores are there. These health risk scores are based on validated pharmacy-based health risk score and then a diagnostic-based health risk score, and these two scores were combined. The bottom two rows shows the eligible months. At baseline for the Medicaid, you'll see it was about 15 months, substantially longer than GAU, general assistance. People tend to stay on not as long. But it didn't matter how long they stayed on. We still had a full 2 years of employment data and a full 2 years of crime data on everybody, regardless of whether they were eligible for Medicaid or general assistance for 2 months or 15 months. That didn't matter. So these are this slide shows some data on crime rates per 100 clients in the two-year baseline period and follow-up period. So again, these are 2 years. So if you want to divide in half, you'd get a sense of crime rates per 100 on an annual basis. So gross misdemeanor, the B stands for baseline, the FU stands for follow-up. And you can see a couple of things. I'm not going to go through all of this, that there were large differences at baseline. The treatment group, and some people are, of course, referred to treatment or required treatment as part of a plea bargaining arrangement. So at baseline, the treatment group in both cohorts, Medicaid and general assistance, had substantially higher crimes per 100 clients. And you'll notice that in the treatment group, the rate went down, whereas in the comparison group, by and large, it either stayed level or went up. Okay, so sort of countervailing trends. This slide shows descriptive data on earnings. As you might imagine, the earnings of this population are very low. The bottom row shows the mean total earnings, and you can see that range from about 1,400 to almost 4,000. Again, the general assistance people tend to be less severely affected by health problems and by substance abuse than the Medicaid disabled group, and that's reflected here. But basically, it's a population, not surprisingly, that has very limited earnings and very limited employment. I should add, though, that the numbers on this screen really represent wages formally reported to the state employment security. So there's obviously a gray a market for, you know, sort of informal labor, and those kind of earnings don't get reported to the state. So this slide shows the crime outcomes associated with chemical dependency treatment. The IRR stands for incident rate ratio, and you can just think of it as the difference in the number of, in this case, arrests of the treatment group relative to the control group. So if it's less than one, the treatment group had fewer arrests. If it's more than one, they had more arrests. But perhaps a more interpretable set of numbers is under the crimes avoided per 100 clients. So you can see in terms of arrests for Medicaid, it was 13.8. For general assistance, substantially more. It was 46 crimes per 100 persons avoided. These were arrests, I'm sorry, when I say crimes. In this case, I meant arrests. Felony charges, similarly, 10 less for Medicaid per 100 clients. For general assistance clients, about 28 less per 100 clients, and gross misdemeanors are showed there as well. All of these differences are statistically significant, by the way. This shows the data on employment outcomes. We've got three measures here, any earnings. So if they had any formal earnings in one of the eight quarters, they were, you know, that variable was switched on in a sense. Otherwise, it was a zero. And you can see the odds ratio here is about 1.5. The estimate for GAU was 1.6, similar. So that one way to think about this is that the treatment group had roughly a 50% higher probability of or likelihood of having any earnings during the follow-up period. Quarters with earnings, 1.34 and 1.39, so that those differences are substantial. And then the total earnings, it was $218 per Medicaid person in the 2-year follow-up, and $782 per person for the general assistance. So both, like the crime outcomes, employment outcomes showed a favorable relationship to treatment. So a couple of conclusions. Expanding treatment had beneficial effects on crime and employment outcomes and generated a positive cost offset for healthcare expenditures. That's not part of this study, but that was the other study I mentioned. Treatment was associated with meaningful and statistically significant reductions in criminal activity and improved employment outcomes. And lastly, to the extent possible, I think this is pretty well accepted now, to the extent possible, evaluations of treatment should expand their focus to include outcome measures such as crime and employment. Thank you for your attention.